Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. It's an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour is an editorial review, brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on milk. The milk of human kindness is not pasteurized right after this. You know, in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth. Today, our food supply is down to less than 38 days worldwide. And these global 2000, the scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians that back this global 2000 program plan to use famine, disease, plague, and pestilence to reduce Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years or so, they claim, through the Club of Rome. Now, in Revelation chapter 6, the God of Israel told us exactly the same thing in essentially the same words, using terms like false prophets, war, famine, and disease. Well, in 1920, nearly 50% of our people in the United States lived out on the land as subsistence farmers, producing their own food and food for the rest of the world and you and me. But today, we Americans have now chosen to live in our cities, and only 3% of us live out on the land. 97% of Americans are no longer self-sufficient in their food production. Now, we Americans produce grain for export, all right, and then we turn around and import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. Our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support this global 2000 world population control program. And these globalists, with their genocide agenda, have a cause that they're willing to die for. And I say, let them die for their cause and let you and I live for ours. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Remember, my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about ice cream. Last time we ran out of time, and I was giving you some of the particulars in the ice cream trick. For instance, we found out that ice cream, with all of its chemicals that are added to the product and the way it's made, none of it has to appear on the label because of the standards that are set down by the Food and Drug Administration. And when you have a food like milk, there's a quality of standards that comes into play. We all know what milk is, and so therefore we don't have to tell you what's been added to the milk. So when we manufacture ice cream, we don't have to tell you what we're putting into the ice cream. Now, we could tell you about the additive CMC causing tumors and polysorbate 80 causing premature death in experimental animals, but I guess you get the message. If you want to go on an Eskimo pie trip in the sky, then eat commercial ice cream. And here's something else you ought to know. Unlike milk, there are no federal standards setting the maximum number of bacteria to be allowed in ice cream. And as we pointed out in Chapter 4, pasteurized ice cream has been a not infrequent source of food poisoning epidemics all across America. So the idea that your food, when it's pasteurized, is safe is a fiction. Now, Americans over the past century have been unable to connect the dots between food, disease, and overall health. Unable to connect the dots. And the manufacturers of ice cream really get away with murder when they sell you reworked ice cream. Now, reworked is a euphemism for covering up stale ice cream and selling it as fresh. They just throw it back into the fresh or with the fresh, and then they add more chemicals, and presto, America's fun food. Now, if you like chocolate, raise your hand. I knew you did because everybody likes chocolate. Now, the best way to disguise the poor quality of reworked ice cream is to add a lot of chocolate. Now, there's not much good news about chocolate, and there is a lot of bad news, so if you don't want to be turned off on chocolate, then you want to turn the radio off right here. Now, the following information on chocolate comes from a newsletter of Tom Cooper, MD, of Atlanta, Georgia, and as I can't improve upon it, I'm simply going to repeat it here. Almost everyone with a weight problem has a chocolate problem, and since I've heard a time, or if I've had a hard time resisting chocolate, I decided to see if there was anything about it that would turn me off on chocolate, so I struck pay dirt in the first reference book that I consulted. And in a Food and Drug Administration policy guideline in a reference publication concerning chocolate. Now, here it is right from your government, Food and Drug Administration policy guideline on chocolate. It seems that candy bars don't grow on trees. And over half the chocolate that we consume comes from cocoa trees found in West Africa and in countries like Ghana, Nigeria, Ivory Coast, and Cameroon. Now, the cocoa tree grows in a lush tropical environment and has a number of fungi and insects that are enemies to this plant. It is necessary to spray the trees with a number of control chemicals, including organic and potentially toxic fungicides that could remain in small amounts in the harvested cocoa beans. Now, the cocoa trees produce a certain number of seed pods every year, and these pods are harvested, and the cocoa beans are then removed manually by natives. They're then spread out on the jungle floor and allowed to ferment. That's a nice way to say rot for 5 or 6 days in the jungle heat and humidity. And there's nothing to keep insects and small animals from nesting and feeding among the beans while they're exposed to these elements. So it's very common in these third world countries to find animal droppings, dead insects, and animal hair in this fermenting collection of cocoa beans. Now, after they've stayed like this for the required period of time, they're packed in jute or plastic bags and then stored in harbor warehouses until it's time to load them into the holds of ships for transportation to the United States. Now, in the warehouses and in the ship holds, they're again subjected to the ravages of resident rodents and insects. Now, the cocoa bean is a rich source of fats and carbohydrates and is relished by both kinds of pests. The resulting mixture of cocoa beans, insect fragments, rodent droppings, leaves, and rat hairs is unloaded in this country and then taken to one or another of the various chocolate processing factories. A conscientious effort is made by these companies to remove as many of these contaminants as they possibly can. But the thousands of tons of raw material processed each month make this a virtual impossibility. You can't get it all out. Now, to quote the FDA manual, the action levels are set because it's not now possible and never has been possible to grow in open fields, harvest, and process crops that are totally free of natural defects. Now, when you translate natural defects into plain English, that means hairs, insect fragments, and animal waste, also known as rat droppings. And there is, and I know you will be comforted to know this, a level at which the FDA will seize a product and then not let it be sold. So if 100 grams, now that's about 3 ounces of chocolate, exceeds an average of 60 microscopic insect fragments, or one rodent hair, when 6 similar samples are analyzed, or if any one sample contains more than 90 insect fragments or 3 rodent hairs, then this sample will be rejected by the FDA. Now, I suppose this means that if there are only 59 insect fragments or only one rodent hair per 100 grams, then we're all right. Animal waste is normally the color of chocolate, and it cannot be tested for with any great accuracy. The cooking process, however, destroys almost all of the germs, so I guess this means that it's reasonably healthy. Nobody is hurt by this contamination since the hairs and insect fragments are partly protein, but the aesthetic aspect of chocolate with all of this possible filth mixed in with it has made me less likely to eat it. And I'm afraid that when I bite into a candy bar, the crunch may not come from peanuts, but from something else. And here's a word of caution on sherbets also. Avoid them as you would soggy cigarette butts. This light, cool summer delight called sherbet is strictly bottom of the line. Sherbets have very little milk solid. The milk solids are replaced by a heavy dose of additives and sugar. There is over a pound of sugar in a gallon of sherbet. The National Dairy Council, whose job is to reform or inform the American people about dairy products, says rigid government standards assure consumers of ice cream's purity, healthfulness, and high quality. Well, what that means in language that we can understand is that rigid government standards, purity, high quality, healthfulness, they even recommended it as a breakfast surprise. Makes you want to throw up. So belly up to the ice cream bar and order an antifreeze frappy, sorbitum soda, lice killer cooler, paint solvent sundae, a terasodium, let's see if I can pronounce this one here, pyrophosphate split, or a red dye delight. Yummy. Now, eating germs for good health, like yogurt, kefir, and kumis, that's K-O-U-M-I-S-S. Have you ever heard that name before? Until I read this book, I'd never heard of kumis. Kumis, I guess it is, K-O-U-M-I-S-S-S. It's pronounced kumis, K-U-M-E-E-C-E. It's made from horse milk, just in case you wanted a little horse milk delight here. Raw milk is a good food, but cultured raw milk is even better. Many people who cannot drink pasteurized milk can drink raw milk, but some can't even drink that. They just can't handle the lactose, and this would be very frustrating in trying to treat patients with milk therapy, but fortunately, we have cultured fermented milk to work with. Now, these cultured products, yogurt, kefir, and kumis, are pre-digested. That is, there are other cultured milks such as Kildare milk from Norway and Seeker from Iceland. Basically, they're about the same. The fat, sugar, and protein has been partially broken down, making them digestible for practically everyone. A large percentage of Negroes and other dark-skinned races cannot tolerate milk, pasteurized or raw, but many tribes in Africa practically live on cultured milk from their herds. And it's claimed that people who rely heavily on cultured milk in their diet live longer in some areas of Russia, where large amounts of kumis, that is, horse milk, are consumed. There are a large number of people who live to be 100 or more. Nikita Khrushchev, the former dictator of Russia, said that 3 times as many people live to be 100 years old in his country than in the United States. Now, he didn't make it, I guess because he drank too much vodka. Bennett reported in 1971 that in one small Black Sea village, there were 180 people over 91 years old. These people were rarely sick, and atherosclerosis was uncommon. They drank a lot of cultured milk. I'm going to pause here and make an observation here. We're talking about this digestibility of milk. It's my position that God, when he created cows and milk, didn't make a mistake. And in the scripture, when you read of the land of milk and honey, and you read about milk and butter and so on, God intended for you to drink it, intended for you to use butter, and intended for you to enjoy it. And it's a tremendous source of nutrients in its raw form, of course, before it's been perverted, pasteurized, and homogenized. But this thing of people being lactose intolerant, it also follows that calves can be lactose intolerant. Now what happens in calves is this. Calf is born, and for whatever reason, the calf does not drink the colostrum, that is the first milk that the cow puts out. This colostrum is absolutely essential to the digestive system of an animal, such as a calf, and the same thing is true with humans. Now when you have penicillin or other antibiotics, it kills the bacteria in your gut. And when it kills the bacteria in your gut, especially in small children, these children fail to thrive. It's a medical term that they use. In calves, when we're raising calves, we find that when they lack, or when they've been given penicillin, or if they lack the colostrum, they will fail to thrive. They get the scours, they're sickly, they're puny. Just like American children are. Most American children are sick and puny. And that's because they're raised on formula instead of breast milk, and they're fed these chemical diets, you know, and these soda pops and high sugar. They're drugged, you know, with sugar constantly, and sugar is a drug. And so as a result of that, they grew up to be lactose intolerant, and then they wake up one day and they say, well, gee, I can't drink milk. It's almost like saying, well, God made a mistake when he made milk. Fortunately, we have Pfizer and Monsanto and the drug companies, and then they can fix those problems for us with genetic engineering and GMO seeds and things like that. That's just total nonsense. And Americans have been unable to connect these dots. So let me connect this dot for you. If you are lactose intolerant, it's because you don't have the bacteria in your gut to digest the milk. That's what the problem is. You can't digest the milk. So here's the way you fix that. First of all, you start off with colostrum, just like a newborn calf. And you take the colostrum. And you can buy these colostrum pills and tablets. They're kind of pricey. And you can get them in the drugstore, health food stores, and et cetera. And that will replace. Acidophilus does the same thing. And you can replace that flora in your gut. Then you can digest these foods. Just thought I'd share that with you in case you wanted to enjoy milk once again. Assuming, of course, that the milk that you're going to get is raw, whole milk. Now, yogurt consumption has skyrocketed here in the United States in recent years and is expected to be a $1 billion business. Kefir, a liquid product with different and even better bacteria than yogurt, is coming on fast. Its consistency is about halfway between yogurt and buttermilk. That makes it just right for the American palate, sort of like a milkshake, and I predict that it'll eventually overtake yogurt in consumption. Kumis will never make it in this country, although it's probably the best of the lot, closer to human milk. It contains 5 times more vitamin C than cow's milk, but Americans just won't drink horse milk. Now, the trouble with yogurt in this country is the same as the rest of our food. When the product caught on, the big food producers moved in with their sugared, pasteurized, phony yogurt. People have a vague conception that yogurt is good for them, a health food, but when polled, most didn't have the vaguest notion as to why. And most people polled didn't know that billions of live-friendly bacteria make yogurt what it is, yogurt. And these bacteria not only pre-digest the fat, sugar, and protein, they also crowd out the lethal bacteria in the gut. Perhaps even more important, these microorganisms manufacture their own antibiotics to destroy disease-causing germs. Now, one of these good germs is called lactic acid strep, not the kind that causes strep throat. And it suppresses spoilage germs, and that's why African natives can use it without refrigeration. As most consumers are not aware of the importance of these bacteria in their yogurt, the manufacturers can get away with cultures with a low count or absolutely no bacteria at all. This is really pathetic because they think they're getting a longer shelf life by pasteurizing out all of the friendly bacteria, where actually the opposite is true. Now, when they rape the product of all of the good bacteria, they should make them call it no-gurt rather than yogurt. So keep in mind that just because you're buying yogurt, if it's pasteurized, there isn't any bacteria. That's the purpose, remember, boys and girls, of pasteurization is to kill all the bacteria. And it not only kills all the bad bacteria, it kills all the good bacteria as well. So in the bacterial world, there's good bugs and there's bad bugs. Now, we want to avoid the bad bugs, but we want all of the good bugs we can get. And the natural way to do that, the way that God designed this, is for you to eat natural, whole, raw food. And if you eat natural, whole, raw food, it's going to taste a lot different than the manufactured food that comes out of our manufacturing food industry. So tuck that away in your heart. I had a lady one time, I sold her some butter. She wanted some butter, and she was really excited. She came from the city, and she wanted natural butter, you know, unpasteurized, the real stuff. And so I sold her a little, and she said, oh, this stuff tastes awful. I don't like it. It's really bad. And I agreed with her. I said, yeah, that's true. You see, butter, when it comes out of the factory, it has certain chemical additives and flavor enhancers that are put in it. That's why butter in California tastes exactly the same as butter in Pennsylvania. The standards for the manufacturing of butter in the United States is the same nationwide, just like gasoline. You know, the standards for the manufacture of gasoline is the same in Oregon as it is in New York, Illinois, and Florida. I mean, it's an industrial product. Food is not an industrial product, boys and girls. And food tastes different in every local locality. Natural food tastes different. Strawberries grown in organic soil in California will taste different than strawberries grown in organic soil in Florida. Chemical strawberries in California will taste different than natural strawberries. And depending upon where you grow them and the time of year that they mature, the flavor changes. We can't have products like that. We manufacture products like McDonald's. A McDonald's Big Mac tastes exactly the same in California as it does New York, London, Singapore, or Hong Kong. And it's because the ingredients are exactly the same. It's a manufactured product. And once you've acquired a taste for that manufactured product, then when you eat the natural, you know, like my grandma's hamburger or my Aunt Bessie's hamburger or Aunt Dorothy's hamburger, every one of them is different. And that's because they all have different ingredients. My Aunt Bessie makes a different kind of hamburger than my Aunt Dorothy. My granny cooked hamburgers different than Dorothy or Aunt Bessie. They're never the same. And that's the way natural foods are. The natural foods have vitamins and minerals in them. And vitamins and minerals sometimes taste bitter, or they'll taste sweet, or they'll have different flavors. That's why honey, you know, alfalfa honey is different than clover honey, is different than orange blossom honey, is different from apple honey, is different from eucalyptus honey, and so on down the line. All honey has a different flavor, depending upon what the bees are making the honey out of. All milk has a different flavor, depending upon what the cow eats. That's why in America, all milk tastes the same, because the standards are the same. That's why we put these cows out on a feedlot. We do not let these cows eat grass out in the field. Hell, those cows might go out there in the field, and they might eat daisies, dandelions. They might eat burdock or something else. So what we do is we feed them alfalfa, just like we do bees. We feed the bees clover, and they make clover honey. We feed the cows alfalfa, and they make alfalfa milk. And that's all you get in America. That's all you can get here. And so when somebody actually drinks raw, natural produced milk out of a free-range cow who's eating out in the field and balancing her diet with all of the vitamins and minerals that she needs, the taste is going to be different. In some cases, and at some times of the year, it's bitter. And if you don't like the bitter taste, you have to put a little Ovaltine in it or a little carob powder or something to cover that bitter taste. But rest assured that when you're drinking raw milk, you're drinking what the cow needs to eat to produce the vitamins and minerals for that calf. She balances her diet. She'll eat whatever she needs to make sure that that milk is filled with all the vitamins and minerals that God intended. Isn't the miracle of evolution marvelous that it just works that way? All right, I told you about the therapeutic effectiveness of raw milk with yogurt and kefir. You can multiply that effectiveness by at least 2. You can double it. Fermented milk therapy is big in Russia. There are over 50 sanitaria in the Soviet Union using cultured milk therapy. For kumis production, the Russians are milking 250,000 horses. It's not even enough to fill the demand. Can you imagine that 250,000 horses milking? For a serious disease, the patient is fed 1.5 quarts of cultured milk, usually kumis, daily. Now, Elias Metchnikoff, a Russian scientist who worked with Louis Pasteur was the first distinguished scientist to claim that cultured milk has great therapeutic value. He won the Nobel Prize in Medicine, by the way, in 1908. 70 years later, he's being taken seriously in this country. A host of new and effective antibiotics have been isolated from the bacteria of cultured milk, such as lactobacillus, Bulgarian lactobrevirion, lactobrevin, and many others. Many deadly organisms are controlled by this new breed of antibiotics from fermented milk. And milk will lower cholesterol, but yogurt and kefir will do it even better. A unique anti-cholestermic milk factor has been discovered in fermented milk. What this factor is remains a mystery. Now, here's another little story I got to add in here. In the book, you'll read the whole story here, but milk contains so many different vitamins, minerals, and thingies, I'll just call them thingies, that they haven't even found them all yet. They can see them, but they don't know what they are, and they haven't cataloged them all. That reminds me of mothers, you know, they go to the pediatrician. Of course, the pediatrician's a scientist. He's a doctor. He knows everything. Doctors and scientists, they know everything. They don't know all of the constituents of milk, but they can see that there are more thingies in the milk than we've got names to hang on them. And so the pediatrician says, well, now, you don't want to feed your baby natural breast milk, mother. You want to give this baby formula. Give them formula. And so they go out and they buy this formula, and on the label of the formula, it brags about all of the vitamin D that's been added, and this is and that, and another thing that's been added. And it's got about 12 or 14 ingredients. Now, the ingredients in milk, there are 92 minerals alone, 92 minerals. In addition to that, there's about 15 or 20 or 30 or 50 vitamins. I don't know how many vitamins are in this milk. And remember that for the first 3 or 4 months, this is all this baby's going to get is its mother's breast milk or the cow's milk out of the cow. And all of the nutrition has to come out of that milk, which just fortunately God put all of it in there, that we have not been able to isolate and identify all of the thingies that are in the milk, but somehow or another we've become convinced that Borden or Similac or some other manufacturer can do a better job than God has already done. Thank God for Similac that they came along and fixed God's mistake and created a product better than mother's breast milk. Now, if you believe that, you got your head up your rectal region somewhere. Now you just take a look, any dairyman, any cattleman out here, at a bucket-fed calf and compare that to a calf that's sucking on a cow, and the calf sucking on the cow will be twice the size of a bucket baby any day of the week. And most Americans are smaller. Just take a look in the cities at how small people are. Then come out here into the rural areas and take a look at the people that live in Iowa, Nebraska, and Missouri out here on the farms. People that are breastfed babies turn out to be bigger, stronger, and healthier. Bigger, stronger, and healthier. Same thing in cattle, same thing in sheep and goats. You leave those lambs out there on those mothers, and there's just no comparison between one that's bucket-fed and one that's bottle-fed, or rather, and one that's sucking on its mother. Now, if you want to improve your sex life, we don't guarantee you anything, but consider the story of Dr. Edward Spiker of Munich, Germany. He came to the United States in 1937 to promote a product unknown to the American people called yogurt. Now, he had eaten yogurt all of his life, and he was accompanied by Countess Alma von Blücher, a friend of the family. The year before that he had his second child by second wife, he was 72 years old. He still had hair on his head and needed no glasses. Now, we've been unable to determine his present place of residence. If alive, he's only 120. He was accompanied by Countess Alma von Blücher, and there were three reasons why yogurt, kefir, and kumis prolong life. They protect against infection because of the built-in antibodies. They're protective against hardening of the arteries, and there is a potent anti-cancer effect. Now, remember I said when we started today's program that Americans have been unable over the past 100 years to connect the dots between health, disease, and nutrition. Now, back at the turn of the century, the cancer rate in the United States was 1 out of 33. That is, one person in 33 in the course of his lifetime in 1900 would contract cancer. Today in 2005, it's 2 to 1. That is, every other person in America will contract cancer in his lifetime. That's half the population. Now, something's different today in 2005 in America than was extant in 1900. Now, you can sit there and argue, well, it isn't food, it's something else. Well, okay, well, then what is it? Can you identify? Modern medical science is unable to identify why it is that cancer is so prolific in America. We can look at the statistics in 1900. We can look at the statistics today. And somebody said to me, yeah, but 1900, they couldn't diagnose cancer. Oh, come on. Come on now. Let's grow up and get to be real big boys and girls. We could identify what cancer was 200 years ago. We might not have had the sophisticated equipment to diagnose cancer, but you know, when you cut somebody open in an autopsy and you look at them, you can tell that that's cancer. And you can tell when something is common. Now, I can remember the word autism. I never heard the word autism until sometime in the 1970s, autism. AIDS, I never heard the word AIDS until sometime in the 1980s. Muscular dystrophy, I never heard of that word until sometime in the 1960s, 70s, or 80s. Muscular dystrophy, multiple sclerosis, AIDS. You know, these are diseases. These are symptoms that people have today that are fearful and terrible diseases that we never heard of 50 or 100 years ago. Why is that? Because they didn't exist? Oh, no, they existed. But they were so uncommon, so infrequent, that in the medical literature it was a nowheresville. Today, they're talking about autism now being an epidemic. Now, normally we think of epidemics as being germ-caused. Autism isn't caused by germs that we know of, but it's being caused by something. I've brought this out a time or two. You know, when I was a kid, I think that you got 3 or 4 or 5 vaccinations. I didn't get any. My granny figured that if God had intended for you to have vaccinations, he'd have built you with a needle sticking out of your arm, so they just hook up the hypodermic needle in your arm to the syringe, you know, and then shoot you up. But now, my old granny, she was kind of a natural lady. She kind of believed in raw fruits and vegetables and, you know, just natural thingies. And she lived to be 88, smoked a pack of Camels every day from 18 to 85. She had a stroke at age 85. Imagine what that old lady might have done, or how long she might have lived if she hadn't smoked and debased her body for 80 years or 60 years. But anyway, she lived a good long life, and she was pretty healthy her entire life. Taught me the same thing. So, you know, if it ain't natural, leave it alone. Americans haven't been able to connect those dots. That's the tragedy here in America. Well, listen, I got to give you a little reminder here. Let me tell you this story. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, just go to our website, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by pre-arrangement, and the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law School also offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the internet. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the opinions or beliefs of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember the website georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. There is surprisingly little research on this important aspect of culture to milks. A check with the American Cancer Society on this exciting avenue of research brought the following response. And the original research on the anti-cancer effect of cultured milks was done more than 20 years ago. Work at the Sloan Kettering Institute for Cancer Research has confirmed and enlarged on the original studies. They found that Lactobacillus acidophilus possessed definite anti-tumor activity. Okay, now let me pause here. Remember I said this acidophilus? Well, that acidophilus is the gut bacteria that you have to digest your food. Inside your stomach and your intestines, there are bacteria. Now, if you puncture your gut and it leaks out into your stomach cavity, that'll kill you. That's why when people get shot, they have to go to the hospital and have their stomachs cleaned out, and then they've got to be sewed up and then looked after quite carefully. Once you get a rupture in there, those bacteria get to working in your body, and they'll kill you. Now, those bacteria digest your food, and they're necessary in your gut. If you don't have them, you get sick, you fail to thrive, and so on. So if you'd go consult somebody about acidophilus, or if you'd take some colostrum, you take that colostrum, and you can replace that bacteria in your gut. And here's what happens when you take antibiotics. All of you people that have been shooting up with antibiotics are sickos. You know why you're sicko? It's because the penicillin or this drug that you're taking here for colds and flus that really don't do any good for colds and flus, it kills the bacteria. Kills the bacteria in your gut, good and bad. Kills it all. And then when you recover from this disease or whatever it is that you went to the doctor to get this penicillin for, you killed off all of your good bacteria, and now you can't digest your food, so you become lactose intolerant. Now, you're already lactose intolerant when it comes to pasteurized, homogenized milk, because remember, there's an enzyme in the milk that you have to break it down to get some of the vital nutrients out of it, such as calcium. And keep in mind that all disease now is caused by either one or two factors, or sometimes both in combination. One is poison, toxins. And as we took a look here at ice cream, you know, we put antifreeze in it. Well, let me ask you this, boys and girls, are you suffering from an antifreeze deficiency? Is that why you want to eat ice cream, is because you just can't get enough antifreeze? I mean, you know, do you honest to God, do you believe that antifreeze in your diet is causing good health? Do you think that's good for you? Do you think that these chemicals, that these additives that's going into the ice cream are good for your health? Those are health-giving. Do you think that this antifreeze or Curemagen and sorbic 80, do you think that that's as good as vitamin C, vitamin D, and trace elements and minerals? I mean, I suspect that Americans must actually believe that these chemicals in the food are either one, harmless, or two, actually good for it. Now, the accumulation of all of these chemicals that you get in your food, and if you just look on the package of Oreo cookies or any product, any manufactured product, take a look on there, and when you see words that you can't pronounce and you've never seen before, that's the stuff that's not good for you. If you can't even pronounce it, it sure as hell can't be good for you. That's the way I figure it. Hell, if I can't pronounce it, it sure as hell can't be intelligent. Now, added to all of the above advantages is the fact that yogurt, kefir, and kumis are more nutritious than milk. They're much higher in B vitamin content and vitamin C, and the protein is the very highest quality available for human consumption. All right, now that's nutrition. Nutrition. The other half of it, either one, you're poisoning yourself, or number two, you're starving yourself. Starving yourself. So when you're eating foods that are devitalized, when you take the wheat, you know, and you take that kernel, and you take the white out, and you take all the rest of it, the bran and the germ and the rest of it, and you feed that to the cattle, it's good for the cattle, but it's not good for you. And it's called devitalized food. And these devitalized foods, they taste good. You know, it's like Krispy Kreme. I mean, if God made anything better than a Krispy Kreme, he must have kept it for himself. Now, I find it hard to believe that eating a Krispy Kreme is going to kill me. But by the same token, you know, when you go down to Dunkin' Donuts or Krispy Kremes, you know, and you're a contractor, and this is the way we all start the day, we go in and we start eating Krispy Kremes with coffee. That's what our breakfast consists of if you're a contractor. And you're planning out the day's work, you know. So you show up at the Krispy Kreme place at 6, and from 6 to 6:30, you're lining out your crew. So you say, go to work at 7. And you get these guys lined out, and all of us are eating donuts and coffee. Okay. Well, then at 10:30, you know, welcome wagon comes by, you know, they serve what? Well, coffee and more donuts or sweets or some kind of crap, you know, that we eat. And then we have our lunch, which is made up of white bread and probably ham and a couple of other unclean foods, and it's slathered with mayonnaise that's made with GMO soybeans, and that's lunch. And then we drink more coffee, and then we probably have another welcome wagon treat at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then maybe we're going to work until 5 or 6, and if we're in a hurry, we might want to work until 7. Then we come home dead tired. And we're going to eat dinner. What's that? Some kind of TV crap that comes from the microwave after you've nuked it, and then you eat. And then we eat this kind of crap, and this goes on week after week, month after month, and then we wonder why at age 37 our hair falls out, we got cataracts, and we get diagnosed with cancer. You know, it's either you're poisoning yourself or you're starving yourself or some combination of the two that gives you these symptoms that we call disease. It's lifestyle. And if that's the way you want to live, you know, get after it. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. If you're tired of that, this book on The Milk of Human Kindness Is Not Pasteurized is a dynamite book. If you can get a copy, I'm not even sure you can get one. Published by, or written by, William Campbell Douglas. It was published by Last Laugh Publishers, 2550 Windy Hill Road, Suite 315. I remember this book's 20 years old, so I don't know if these addresses are any good to you, but I'll give it to you anyway, and you can write them a letter. Marietta, Georgia, 30067. That's Last Laugh Publishers, 2550 Windy Hill Road, Suite 315, Marietta, Georgia, 30067. You know, you might find a copy of a book like this in your public library, and you might find it in a used bookstore. And what you do with these used bookstores, you walk in, give them the title of the book and the author, and they'll plug that into their computer, and they'll find a copy of that book in Los Angeles, New York, or Tallahassee, Florida. It's a hell of a system. Now, let's see. I'm going to give you one more piece of information here. There's 50 states. Some of these states, you can buy raw milk. You won't find it in your grocery stores. Now, there's only two states where commercial raw milk is made, to my knowledge. It's Mathis Dairy in Georgia. I don't know if it's available statewide in Georgia. And Altadena Dairy in California. I don't know if milk or raw milk is available statewide in California, but it is in Southern California. So if you take a look where milk may, raw milk may not be sold, raw milk cannot be sold in Alabama. If you just listen up now, if I hit your state, where it may be sold, or it may be sold, or there's no data available, you know, I'll give you these states, and they'll show you how to find raw milk in your local area. Starting off where you cannot buy raw milk, period. It's not available. It's against the law. It may not be sold in Alabama, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, the District of Columbia, Florida, Georgia, Hawaii, Indiana, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Maryland, Mississippi, Nevada, New Jersey, North Carolina, Ohio, South Dakota, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wisconsin. Now, those are the states where you cannot buy raw milk. Now, to get around that, it's very simple. You sell pet food. Now, if I couldn't sell you raw milk for your children, I can't advertise it, put it on the billboards, but you're the guy that wants it. And you'll need to find a dairy. Now, if you'll advertise, if you'll go talk to your local health food store guy, he'll probably know of some guy that's got a cow or two or three that's milking for his own family, and you might be able to tie into a guy like that. That's the little guys like me, just milks two or three cows for his own family, and there's a little bit of milk left over there, and he'll probably sell that to you. Now, there are probably more goat farms around the country where you can buy raw goat milk than there are farms where you can buy raw cow's milk. But if you put your mind to it, you'll find it. And it's just a matter of, I want it, and I'm going to go get it. I remember one time I had little children here. I used to drive 87 miles one way to Springfield to buy goat's milk for the little babies. All right, now here's where you can sell raw milk. You can buy it. But it's not in the stores. Now, for instance, in Idaho, you can buy raw milk. In Illinois, you can buy raw milk. In Alaska, we don't have any data. I assume you can buy it in Alaska. In Arizona, you can buy raw milk. In Arkansas, you can buy raw milk sold at the farm. In California, it may be sold raw milk. In fact, they've got a dairy there, Altadena, that actually sells it. All right. In Iowa, you can buy it from the farm. Kansas, you can buy it from the farm. In Massachusetts, there's no law one way or the other, so you can buy it at the farm. Michigan, you can buy it on the farm. Minnesota, you can buy it on the farm. In Missouri, you can buy it on the farm. Now, what that means is that I produce it here. And you can come to me and I can sell it to you, but you can't resell it. So that's what effectively shuts off raw milk in Missouri or all of these states. You have a choice. And if you want raw milk, you can go out and you can buy it from the guy that produces it. In Montana, you can buy it on the farm. In fact, in Montana, it can be sold in grocery stores. It can be sold there. You won't find any there because it's just not common. Nebraska, you can buy it on the farm. New Hampshire, it can be sold. And in New Mexico, it can be sold on the farm. New York, it may be sold. Now, there's a number of states here where raw milk can be sold, and you can sell it in the grocery stores, but they don't. In North Dakota, you can be sold. Oklahoma, you can buy it on the farm. Oregon, it can be sold. Pennsylvania, it is allowed. And in Rhode Island, they allow raw goat's milk only. South Carolina, you can buy it on the farm. In Texas, you can buy it on the farm. Utah, it can be sold. Vermont has no law, just like Massachusetts, and in Wyoming, it may be sold. So those are the places where it can't be sold or it can be sold. Now, that's a chart that's in the book, The Milk of Human Kindness, is not pasteurized. If you want a copy of that, write me a letter, and I'll photocopy it. Just send a stamped self-addressed envelope. You want the states where it can and can't be sold, and I'll be happy to copy that for you and send that to you. Now, make sure that you tell me what it is you want. Sometimes people will say, well, you know that freebie that you were offering on the milk series? Hell, I can't remember that a month or two from now. So you got to tell me that you want Appendix 1 from The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. Can I buy raw milk in my state or not? And you offered that. Here's my stamped self-addressed envelope. Copy it and send it to me. Now, that'll jog my memory. As soon as you mention the book, The Milk of Human Kindness, Appendix 1, then I turn to it. And, oh, I guess this guy wants this. Oftentimes, these programs are put on the Internet, on the archive. And somebody may listen to this program a year or two or 5 years from now. And a year or two or 5 years from now, I will not be able to remember that free offer that I made to you on this series. And oftentimes I get letters and they say, well, I want that free offer that you made. Well, what free offer? We make a lot of them. You got to be able to bring it down to and identify it. So if you'll say the milk series from the book, Appendix 1 would be a big help. Or if you just said, hey, listen, there are some states where raw milk can be bought and some states where it's prohibited. Can you tell us from that book that you were citing from? Well, then that says, go find that book. And once I find the book, then I can find the information. Now, there's one more thing I think we ought to cover here. I've got one more program that I can cover this on, and that is butter. Where did this controversy over butter and margarine come from? You ever wonder about that? Well, there's a chapter in the book here, chapter 10, called This Greasy Counterfeit, and it's quite a little story about how butter got replaced by margarine and how government got involved in it, kind of like, you know, government gets involved in some pretty odd events that don't have anything to do with our Constitution or limited form of government, but, you know, people write to their representatives, and they want their representatives and senators to solve their problems. Well, in 1886, the first great impassioned controversy in the Congress developed involving a pure food issue. And this issue was over oleomargarine and whether it should have equal protection with butter. So a bill was introduced into Congress to place a tax on oleomargarine. Never before in the history of the Congress had there been such a hot and emotional debate over food. Representative William Hatch of Missouri termed the controversy the most remarkable elementary contest that has been on this floor for many years. The issue excited a great public interest. In the words of Representative Warner Miller of New York, it would be a new species of legislation, or largely so, in this country and into our system, he said. A South Carolina senator put it this way, said, the most flagrant, unblushed disregard of the principles of our Constitution that's ever been introduced into Congress is before us today. Napoleon, you know, this is Emperor Napoleon III, had personally promoted the quest to find a substitute for butter, which would be less expensive and be have better keeping qualities. So a French food chemist by the name of Hippolyte Maggi Morez, we'll just call him Maggi for short, patented his invention of oleomargarine in 1869. He had done his research on the royal farms of Napoleon III at Vincennes. Maggi began to manufacture his Burry Economique in Paris just after the outbreak of the Franco-Prussian War. I guess Burry must be butter and economic must be economy. Economical butter. That's what they called it in France. Well, in 1873, the United States Dairy Company of New York City acquired the Maggi patent and began producing oleomargarine. So it was a dairy company that started producing oleomargarine. Many Americans at this time, some 180 in all, applied for a similar artificial butter patent. Now, dairymen immediately began to react to this competition, and they began to have laws passed to regulate the sale of oleomargarine. In 1884, New York actually passed a law banning oleomargarine completely, but this was declared unconstitutional by the New York Supreme Court. Maggi's system of production of margarine was bizarre. He used chopped up stomachs of cattle, finely chopped udders of cows or hogs or ewes, added carbonate, soda, coloring matter, and salt to create this new food called oleomargarine. Boy, that tastes just yummy, doesn't it? As James Harvey Young stated, what lured them, the Chicago meatpackers, was a desire to put to profitable use everything but the pig's squeal. The packers used neutral pork fat by using a new deodorizing process. The pork fat was mixed with beef fat and then pressed through a cloth to separate the oleo oil. This was sometimes mixed with milk or cream to make a high grade of oleo. They called the mixture butterine. The manufacturers preferred this name to oleomargarine. There were many variations to this technique depending on the manufacturers. They were careful to package the product in tubs shaped just like those traditionally used for butter. This butterine was aggressively marketed, and it was often fraudulently sold at the retail level as butter. Now, as the imitation butter bit deeper into the natural butter market, dairymen reacted even more strongly and set up a convention to pass national laws against the misrepresentation of butterine and oleomargarine. From this convention, a bill was formulated and was presented to the Congress of the United States in 1886. It quickly passed the House, and after some modification by the Senate, it was signed into law by President Grover Cleveland. Senator Bob La Follette, never at a loss for words, had this to say: "Ingenuity, striking hands with cunning trickery, compounds a substance to counterfeit an article of food. It is made to look like something that it is not, to taste and smell like something that it is not, to sell like something that it is not, and to deceive the purchaser. This monstrous product of greed and hypocrisy makes its way into the home and on the table of every consumer. Here is a villainous device for making money lawlessly, subtly eating the heart out of an industry which is to the government what blood is to the body." All right, so let's pause right there and make a comment. This margarine is a manufactured product. And we Americans are enthralled with manufacturing and manufactured products. That's why we Americans have accepted this new technology of genetically modified organisms. We love it. It's a part and parcel of our culture. And now we're trying to export it around the world. And for all the rest of you people out there in the world, you want to remember that 99% of Americans have symptoms of some kind. We have allergies. We have cancer, stroke, heart attack, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, herpes, and all kinds of sexually transmitted diseases. Many of these diseases, in fact, most, are degenerative diseases. Diseases that are caused by nutritional deficiencies or just outright toxins and poisons that we put into our food. So for all of the rest of you people in the world, if you see a package that is made to be ingested into your mouth and into your body, if you see that it's made in America, you should avoid it like AIDS, herpes, and VD. If it's a food product, if it's labeled food, if it is under the guise of food and made in America, don't eat it. That'd be my advice. Hell, I'm an American and I don't eat American food. I mean, this stuff isn't fit to eat. And that's why we're the sickest nation in the world. I'm out of time. We'll be back to finish this story off tomorrow night. In the meantime, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log, schedule, and archive. You can access the website at georgegordon.org. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. All right, we're out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, talking about milk. So until then, good night, friends.